the Mayflower, Plymouth Rock, the first Thanksgiving. These images are seared into American memory like childhood bedtime stories. But what happened after the feast? 56 years later, another ship, the Seaflower, departed New England carrying 180 Native American slaves bound for Caribbean plantations, authorized by the children of those same pilgrims who once depended on indigenous kindness for survival. This jarring contrast reveals a truth we've carefully avoided. America's origin story doesn't end with shared turkey and gratitude. It culminates in one of the bloodiest conflicts in our history, a war so devastating it nearly erased both cultures from New England entirely. The real story isn't about how different peoples came together. It's about how 50 years of fragile coexistence collapsed into mutual destruction. The Mayflower Crossing was no heroic adventure. It was a desperate last resort. For 65 days, 102 passengers endured a space barely 5 feet high while North Atlantic storms battered their wooden prison. These weren't adventurers, but families fleeing religious persecution. Radical Puritans, so uncompromising, they'd already fled England for Holland 12 years earlier. When their children began becoming Dutch and war with Spain loomed, America became their final chance to preserve both faith and English identity. Their beliefs were dangerously radical. They insisted congregations formed direct covenants with God, electing their own ministers, a rejection of England's hierarchical church that could mean imprisonment or death. They believed in predestination. God had already chosen who would be saved, driving constant moral vigilance. For orphaned William Bradford, this spiritual community offered the family he'd never had. Everything went wrong immediately. Their financial backer betrayed them, demanding they work exclusively for his company. Their second ship was deliberately sabotaged. By September 1620, they finally departed on the overcrowded Mayflower. The crossing tested them brutally. One cruel sailor mocked the seasick passengers, promising to help cast half of them overboard. He became the first to die. Bradford noted it was the just hand of God upon him. Young John Howland tumbled overboard during a storm, but miraculously caught a trailing rope. His rescue allowed him to father 10 children and 88 grandchildren, one random moment shaping countless American lives. After 65 days, they sighted Cape Cod on November 9, well north of their intended destination. Attempting to sail south toward the Hudson River, treacherous shoals nearly destroyed them. Only a fortunate wind shift saved them, forcing them back, a navigational crisis that fundamentally altered American history. Landing north of their patent created legal problems. When non-separatist passengers threatened to use their own liberty once ashore, the settlers drafted the Mayflower Compact, establishing self-government before confirming John Carver as governor. This pragmatic solution to potential mutiny would later be celebrated as foundational to American democracy. What they discovered ashore was both promising and deeply unsettling. Diverse trees, fertile soil, cleared fields, abandoned villages, and whitened bones. Evidence of thriving communities now mysteriously empty. They interpreted this as divine providence. The reality was far darker. 60 miles southwest lived Massasoit, the region's most powerful native leader. Though personally strong and dignified, he presided over a devastated people. Between 1616 and 1619, what may have been bubonic plague killed up to 90% of the region's inhabitants. Massasoit's Pokanockets had been reduced from 12,000 people to just a few hundred fighters. Meanwhile, their enemies, the Narragansetts, remained mysteriously unaffected, leaving Massasoit desperately vulnerable. The village the pilgrims chose, Patuxet, had been completely depopulated by disease. What they saw as God's blessing was actually a mass grave. Construction began December 23rd, but by January, illness ravaged the colonists. With barely half a dozen healthy people left, they tended the sick while construction halted. Bradford praised William Brewster and Miles Standish for their tireless care, preparing meals and emptying chamber pots. When Bradford requested beer from the Mayflower stores, sailors refused, saying, if he were their own father, he should have none. Soon after, disease struck the crew. The proud bosun, who had mothed passengers, experienced a deathbed conversion, crying out that the pilgrims show your love like Christians indeed, while sailors let one another die like dogs. By spring, 52 of the original 102 settlers had perished, leaving orphans, widowers, and devastation. Then, on March 16, everything changed when a tall, naked Indian boldly walked into their settlement and greeted them with, "Welcome, Englishmen."
Samoset's English greeting shocked the pilgrims. This Maine sachem had learned the language from fishermen. He explained they were in plague-emptied Patuxet and promised to return with regional leader Massasoit. Massasoit had watched the pilgrims all winter. Though wary after English sailors killed many of his people, he faced a strategic dilemma. Weakened by disease, he needed allies against the powerful Narragansetts. The pilgrims' weapons could tip the balance. On March 22nd, Massasoit appeared with 60 warriors. They established a six-point peace treaty covering mutual protection, justice, and trade. This alliance, born of mutual desperation, would shape New England for 50 years. Squanto remained with the pilgrims, proving invaluable. He taught them to plant northern flint corn in mounds with fish fertilizer, later adding beans and squash, the three sisters whose vines climbed corn stalks, creating shade that protected roots and discouraged weeds. This knowledge meant survival. The first Thanksgiving likely occurred in late September or October 1621. After four men gathered ducks and geese, Massasoit arrived with 100 Pokanokets and 5 deer. Celebrants gathered around outdoor fires where deer and birds roasted on spits, enjoying wild turkeys, possibly fish, and barley beer. This wasn't yet a symbol of American unity. It was diplomatic necessity between two desperate groups. As the pilgrims expanded treating, Hobomok warned Bradford that Squanto was secretly plotting against them. Squanto claimed the pilgrims possessed plague buried under their storehouse that he could control in exchange for tribute, positioning himself as indispensable middleman while enriching himself. When Squanto's relative arrived claiming the Narragansetts and Pokanokets planned to attack, Hobomok's wife revealed it was another manipulation. Despite the treaty requiring Bradford to surrender Squanto, the governor refused, even when Massasoit's men demanded Squanto's head and hands. This decision severely damaged relations and revealed the pilgrims' dependence on their interpreter. More troubles followed. Thomas Weston betrayed the pilgrims to start his competing settlement at Wissagasset. Bradford felt obligated to host Weston's 60 settlers, young ruffians who strained Plymouth's resources and consumed immature corn stalks, ruining the crop. The Fortune, carrying the pilgrims' entire shipment to England, was seized by the French. Then came word of the Jamestown Massacre, 347 colonists killed. That fall, Bradford led a trading mission with Squanto as interpreter. Before completing their journey, Squanto fell ill with what Bradford described as an Indian fever, bleeding much at the nose. Within days, he was dead, reportedly asking Bradford to pray that he might go to the Englishman's God in heaven. Though Bradford believed Squanto died naturally, he may have been assassinated on Massasoit's orders, the final consequence of his dangerous double dealing. By winter 1623, Plymouth had become a disciplined community, united by faith and Bradford's leadership. 20 miles north, at Wessagasset, a settlement of unattached men fell into despair. Unlike Plymouth, Wessagasset sat directly beside a Massasoit village, increasing both threat and temptation to steal corn. As conditions deteriorated, one man died in the tidal flats, too weak to extract himself. Indians mocked the settlers' weakness and snatched food. Some Englishmen traded their clothes for food until they were naked, trembling skeletons. Others became servants to the Indians. When Massasoit fell gravely ill, Bradford sent Edward Winslow, who saved the sachem with English medicine. In gratitude, Massasoit revealed that the Massachusetts planned to wipe out both English settlements simultaneously. Miles Standish assembled seven Englishmen and Hobomok sailing to Wessagusset under pretense of trading. He lured Witoamit, Peksuit, and two others into a house. Once inside, Standish grabbed Peksuit's knife and stabbed him repeatedly while his men attacked the others. Witoamit's teenage brother was hanged. Standish returned with Witoamit's head displayed on a pole atop the fort. Indians throughout Cape Cod fled their villages in terror, running to and fro like men distracted, living in swamps, which led to widespread disease and death. Pastor John Robinson sent a scathing letter from Leiden, warning against becoming a terror to poor, barbarous people, exactly what would define the next generation's approach to native relations. Until 1630, Plymouth stood alone in New England. Then 17 ships brought 1,000 Puritans to Boston, establishing Massachusetts Bay Colony. Connecticut and Rhode Island soon followed, reducing Plymouth to a backwater. The Pilgrims' children lacked their parents' spiritual fervor. By 1660, church membership had declined so dramatically that Massachusetts instituted the Halfway Covenant. The younger generation viewed Indians as obstacles to prosperity rather than survival partners. In 1662, Plymouth officials learned that Alexander, Massasoit's son and successor, had illegally sold land to Rhode Island. When Alexander ignored a court summons, Major Josiah Winslow, Edward Winslow's son, was ordered to bring him in. After a heated confrontation at gunpoint, Alexander agreed to go. Following a meeting at Winslow's house, Alexander fell severely ill and died days later. The symbolism devastated the Poconokets. 39 years earlier, Edward Winslow had saved Massasoit's life with English medicine. Now his son had confronted Alexander at gunpoint, resulting in the sachem's death within a week. Alexander's brother, Philip, became convinced Winslow had poisoned him, igniting a hatred that would consume New England. Philip became supreme sachem at 24 in August 1662. Despite suspecting his brother's murder, he diplomatically maintained the ancient covenant with Plymouth. But pressures mounted relentlessly. English settlers multiplied, seeking farmland. The Poconokets struggled with extinct beaver populations, devalued wampum, and shrinking territories. Facing financial pressures, Philip sold native territories at unprecedented rates. While only 14 Indian deeds were registered from 1650 to 1659, 76 appeared between 1665 to 1675. Tensions exploded in March 1671 when Philip led 60 armed warriors near English settlements. A confrontation at Taunton ended with Philip's forced submission, surrendering weapons and signing a humiliating treaty requiring tribute as Plymouth's subject. This convinced Philip that war was inevitable. He systematically sold land to finance weapons and arranged with allied tribes to begin fighting the following spring. The final spark came when John Sassaman, Philip's former interpreter turned informant, warned Governor Winslow about Philip's war preparations and was found murdered. Despite insufficient evidence, a jury convicted three of Philip's men. Their executions in June 1675 sealed the path to war. By mid-June 1675, hundreds of Poconoket warriors prepared for war. Philip planned to strike on Sunday, June 20, during church services. Massachusetts sent reinforcements, including Captain Samuel Moseley's reformed pirates. The 300-man English force found only burned settlements and mutilated remains. Philip had vanished. Philip executed a masterful escape, leading 250 warriors and families across the river at low tide. Though he'd lost his homeland, the conflict transformed into regional war. His father Massasoit's alliances with the Nipmucks provided sanctuary, igniting violence across the Massachusetts frontier. Desperate, Philip traveled to Shaktikoke seeking French support, a promise of 300 warriors, unlimited ammunition, and a naval blockade. But his attempt to ally with the Mohawks failed when the English secured their loyalty. In late February, the Mohawks routed Philip's forces, forcing him eastward with diminished reputation. During this time, Mary Rowlandson endured captivity after Lancaster's attack. Shot while fleeing her burning garrison, the bullet also wounded her 6-year-old daughter, Sarah. Surprisingly, Philip showed her kindness, offering food and assistance, a reminder that individual humanity persisted amid war's brutality. March 1676 brought devastating raids. Captain Pierce's force suffered crushing defeat when Canonchet's warriors ambushed them, killing 55 English and 10 praying Indians. Canonchet then led 1,500 Indians in destroying Rehoboth and Providence. By April, colonists weakened by influenza seemed near defeat. However, Connecticut forces captured Canonchet near the Blackstone River. Refusing peace negotiations, he was executed by a Pequot firing squad. Benjamin Church, a 33-year-old carpenter and first Englishman to settle among the Sauconnet Indians, emerged as the war's most effective English commander. Unlike other officers, Church built mixed forces of English and native allies, showing mercy to cooperative Indians and learning indigenous warfare tactics. By late July, Philip's followers were exhausted and starving. On August 11th, Church received intelligence from a deserter. With Sauconnet warriors and a Pawcosset Indian named Alderman, they surrounded Philip's camp at dawn. Philip fled into the swamp where Alderman shot him through the heart. Church ordered his body quartered. Philip's head was displayed on Plymouth's Fort Palisade for over 20 years, a grim monument to how far the Pilgrim's descendants had fallen from their founder's ideals. By fall 1675, slave ships carried captured Indians from New England. Plymouth Colony banned male captives over 14, and even Philip's 9-year-old son was enslaved and shipped to the Caribbean. At least 1,000 Indians were sold into slavery. Mount Hope, once the native center of power, was left deserted. Native Americans dropped from 30% of New England's population to less than 15% by 1680. Though victorious, the English suffered catastrophic war debt, with per capita income taking a century to recover. The conflict killed a higher percentage of the population than any war in American history. The Pilgrims originally sought to recreate modest European communities, not conquer a continent. Bradford and Massasoit understood that necessary accommodation defined their shared world. Their children forgot this wisdom. Benjamin Church embodied America's first frontiersman, part pilgrim, part Indian, who embraced the wilderness his ancestors feared. He favored coercion over slaughter, even saving an elderly Indian captive named Conscience from slavery. Modern Plymouth blends historical authenticity with tourism, but the real story is far more complex. The tragedy wasn't that they couldn't coexist. It's that for 50 years, they did, and then chose not to. The Mayflower brought families seeking religious freedom. The Seaflower carried slaves. Between these two ships lies the real American story. Not inevitable progress, but choices made by flawed people under impossible pressures.